Hi.
My name is Linda Geiser, and I work for the United States Forest Service, and I am the program manager for the air quality program.
And I'm Peter Nelson, and I also work for the Forest Service as the biomonitoring coordinator under the Oak Ridge Association of Universities ORISE faculty appointment. And normally I'm the assistant professor of biology and environmental studies at the University of Maine in Fort Kent. Yeah, I have a question for you, Linda. So okay. Linda started the lichen. So a lichen is an algal and fungal symbiosis that grow on trees and rocks. And Linda, you started essentially what is now a program of monitoring air quality in the whole country, essentially. How did that start? That's an interesting story.
Okay. Well, that started back in the 1980s. And I started working for the Forest Service. I was a soils scientist. I have a master's in soil science and plant nutrition and a PhD in plant ecology, plant physiology. So I started working in soils, and we were in Alaska in the Tongass National Forest, and there was some funding for an air quality study that came through to my boss, who was the Forest Soils person, and he came up to me one day and he said, "Do you know anything about lichens?" And that's how it got started. We started looking at what information was available about biomonitoring and lichens in Alaska, because it was a good place to apply that methodologies, being that it's so remote, it's not very feasible to set up instrumentation to monitor air quality. It's hard to get electricity out to places, and so it was a natural place to start. And I learned about lichens on the job.
So how does it work? I mean, we both know how lichens are useful for monitoring air quality, and I think at a place like AGU, where there's all these different disciplines all represented, I think it's a good analog where you have a biological thing responding to a physical thing in concert with all the other sort of factors. So what's like the simple story of how it works?
Well, lichens have some advantages over other methods, but they're also complementary to other data that we have. So two ways that we use lichens is to track pollutants in the air that are accumulated in lichens, and that can be measured very simply and very inexpensively any place you can find lichens, which in the forests of the United States is pretty much everywhere at any time of year. And then the other way we use them is to better understand whether the levels of pollutants in the air that can be measured or monitored directly or through instrumentation or by modeling are actually having an impact on vegetation. Are they affecting the health of the forest and the flora in the forest? So we look at the species that are present at any particular site, and the relative composition of sensitive, air pollution sensitive to air pollution tolerant species tells us a lot about the levels of acidifying pollutants and fertilizing pollutants that are being deposited to the environment.
Yeah, and so I worked for Linda a long time ago, right out of college, and I got really interested in lichens because it seemed like nobody was really looking at them. As a student in the University of Montana, a friend and I got really interested in lichens, and both of us are still working in lichens, but I saw this job at the Siusla National Forest in Region 6 in Oregon, and it was all about lichens, and I thought, this is it. I have found my job. And I mercilessly harassed Linda with emails and phone calls, and finally she submitted to my annoying persistence and hired me. But then I later learned that the only reason that there was even the option was that this young woman who was going to be hired had some simple snafu about her government job application where she forgot to check that she was a government employee, so she couldn't get hired. And so that woman came as an intern. That woman's name was Larissa, and then that came as an intern that same summer. And this woman and I started to work together, and eventually we got married, thanks to working for Linda. And so if we fast forward, that was in 2006 or five, maybe. We fast forward however many years, 12 years later, you know, I've got a PhD in basically lichens. I'm a professor now, and now I'm back working for you again. And so it seems like a suiting thing to sit here and talk about how that circle or that connection of those interests and personal connections are still there. So I think it's really cool that you had this idea to talk about it. But I also think it's really cool that you're here, because now you've zoomed out and you're thinking about all sorts of air quality, not just the stuff that the lichens have tell us.
That's right. We've both branched out quite a bit. And I remember that story a little bit differently, because you had a brilliant application. And so you didn't really have to pester me very hard. I felt lucky that we had found a person of the kinds of interests and background that you brought to it. And I was really happy that you decided to go to graduate school. I thought that it would be a wonderful thing if you went ahead with that. And now it's my turn to ask a question of you, Peter. One of the ways that you've broadened your interests from lichens and air quality is using remote sensing. And I wonder if you could tell me, I never heard the story of how you got interested in remote sensing, and then maybe you could tell me a little bit about what you've been learning about it, especially in Alaska.
Yeah, that's a great story, actually. So the story is that the Park Service needed a map of the lichens so that we could figure out whether the caribou in Denali National Park were moving around the landscape with relationship to the lichens, because that's what they eat in the winter. And just for context, the caribou herd there 40 years ago had 20,000 animals, and now it's about 3,000. And so they weren't directly asking whether the population decline was related to lichens, but certainly seemed like a good thing to think about. And so we set about trying to make a map using remote sensing, because we had all these measurements we had taken as a technician. I'd worked for 6 years after working for you in Denali, basically making measurements. And so we were going down the road of making maps, and there was a critical juncture where we were going to make two different kinds of maps. We were either going to make a map of the categories of plants, which wouldn't have been sort of continuous estimates of how much a particular lichen was there. It just wouldn't have been like coarse polygons. And I put my foot down and said, no, we want to try to model the cover of lichens directly. And that set in motion basically what I'm doing today, which is look up on the mountainsides of any place in Alaska and you see these bright yellow patches. We should be able to see those in the imagery. And that started the whole process of, well, lichens are really different in the electromagnetic spectrum. We can tell that with our eyes. And the rest of the electromagnetic spectrum in terms of the infrared substantiates that even further. So I've continued to refine the methods by which we can see and tell different plants apart using better and better sensors, and building a library of scans of different lichens so that we can then take the new technologies like a hyperspectral camera and even further separate out the species that we can see in the imagery that we know are there and intermixed with each other. And since they're so small physically, we need to fly. Right now, my lab has a drone with an imaging spectrometer so that we can make really small pixels to be able to say, okay, there's a yellow one and a gray one and a brown one, and get as far down as we can to species, because you and I both know that grouping all lichens together is not at all reflective of the ecology or the impacts to air quality. Doing on time. So I have a question for you. You've broadened to be more than a lichen focused person. What have you learned as the lead of an agency that has a broad mandate for protecting, or at least not a mandate, but you know, a responsibility for protecting air quality? What have you learned in your role as the air program lead?
Well, I became interested in trying to do something to help the agency respond to climate change. So I worked in the Pacific Northwest. After starting in Alaska, I ended up in the Pacific Northwest, and I was there for 24 years monitoring air pollution. And using the lichens, you can also tell a lot about climate trends because they're also responsive to climate. And what I had noticed over those 24 years of monitoring was, for one thing, a lot of the pollutants that we were looking at were getting better. The air was getting cleaner. But on the other hand, we were seeing drastic, to me, as an ecologist, and I don't know if an ordinary person would notice it, but I was starting to see very big changes in the forests. A lot more of the sites were burned in our third round than in our second round. And so we're looking at small changes in the lichen community, and we're going there, and the forest is gone, you know. And so I started thinking that addressing climate is really, and greenhouse gases is really something that should be of high priority for the country. But I was wondering, what could I do to help our agency better address climate? So I applied for the program manager position when it came open, not expecting that I would in any way qualify, having focused so much on pollution effects rather than on a lot of the more physical sciences and engineering that's involved in air pollution mitigation that our agency does a lot of in terms of reviews and recommendations. But I got the job, and it's been very, very rewarding working with the spectrum of air specialists in our agency. They cover the gamut of expertise from not only ecologists like myself, but engineers, atmospheric scientists, hydrologists. It's a very multidisciplinary field. So I've learned a lot about smoke and how we can manage smoke, how we can predict where smoke is going, how we can advise communities about the health conditions of the air, as well as how do we analyze the predicted emissions from a new oil and gas field, and how do we assure the state that a new development is going to stay within the National Ambient Air Quality Standards, and how do we understand and communicate with the states about proposed permits for new sources that could impact a wilderness area that gets quite a bit of protection under the Clean Air Act. So it's really been interesting professionally to work with people who deal with this whole array of air quality issues. And really, I think I can speak for the folks in our program when I say that it's something that we all feel proud of being part of, because air quality is so important to people's health and also to the health of the environment.
Well, I'm thankful for the opportunities you've provided me over the last decade plus. I mean, it really changed the whole trajectory of my life, discovering lichens and then, you know, getting a job in lichens, meeting my wife. You know, that really made a lot of difference for me. And so it's a cool opportunity to continue to work with you and, you know, be friends as well as, you know, work together. And I think that's just very unique and special.
Oh, I would totally agree. You and Larissa are two of my favorite people, and I'm so pleased, and it's been one of the most rewarding parts of my job to have had opportunities to mentor people like yourself and many others over the long field seasons these past decades.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Yeah, thanks.